It often comes as a surprise to people to learn that I had a notion at one point in my life that I was going to become a mineral engineer. It wasn't actually just a notion. I was actually enrolled in the University of California, Berkeley, to be a mineral engineer. And I might have been one. I actually took courses in the Hearst Mining Building, a beautiful building on the north side of campus. I walked into the mine that is on campus that goes back into the Hayward Fault. I even took a field trip down to a working borax mine in Death Valley. I could have gone down that dusty road. You know, Phil Brochard, mineral engineer, glad to meet you. And it might have happened had it not been for those pesky engineering courses. You know the ones like physics for engineers? The one that really got me, though, would have been the first course of my first semester. That would be calculus for engineers. That's exactly right. I had done relatively well in physics in high school and my math courses, but I was not prepared when I got to calculus for engineers for the pace or the competition or the fact that I just really didn't care about it. The official record very clearly shows that. Was the first time in my life, and to this point, the only time in my life, that I have actually failed a course, which I did. I got an F for the semester. And as it happens at institutions like the University of California, Berkeley, when you do something like that, you are placed on academic probation. If you don't correct it, you're out. But the challenge was that you can't transfer out of the College of Engineering unless you have at least a 2.0 GPA and have replaced that F with another grade for that course. So the second semester of my freshman year, I was right back with calculus for engineers, along with other courses. And I struggled. It was a very hard semester. And what I remember vividly to this very moment was that the final for calculus that semester was one of the very last finals that was offered. So that when I left that final and came back to the dorms at Clark Kerr, I had to make my way through the roaring celebrations that were going on. I had to weave back to get to my room so that I could crawl into my bed, so that I could pull the covers over my head and cry. Because despite my best efforts, I knew that I had failed. This course that I needed to pass to remain in college, everything was lost. How was I going to face my parents, my family, my friends, all those people who believed in me? All I could see was what was not going to be. Often when we write things in stone, we think that they're going to last for a while. And so it's unexpected when we hear this reading from the book of Jeremiah to hear about a new covenant being offered from God to God's people. A new covenant. What was wrong with the old one? This is an odd place in this book of Jeremiah, the biggest, longest book in the Old Testament, in that we find ourselves this morning in what is known as the Book of Consolation. For chapters and chapters, Jeremiah has been chastising, goading, shaming the people of Israel for their wandering ways. And then it happens. In the year 587 BCE, the doom that Jeremiah saw coming arrives in the form of the Babylonians. They lay siege to the city of Jerusalem. They level the walls, slaughter scores of people. The king of Israel is led away in shackles. The people are devastated. The Davidic kingdom is gone. The temple, the Holy of Holies, where the law resides, is gone. The way that these people encountered God is gone. Have you ever known a time when the way forward has collapsed? When you cannot see how you will keep going? Jeremiah tells the people in this book of consolation that there will be a new covenant. A new covenant is needed, and it is given. The law, the way to come close to God, will no longer be cut on stone, but will be written on their hearts, so that wherever they are taken, wherever they go, God will be with them. Even in the midst of death and desolation, the ancient promise holds that new life will emerge. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. If it dies, it bears much fruit. We are coming close in this story of Jesus week by week, and you can hear it in the words of our story from John's Gospel this morning. The tone, the urgency, they have shifted. This is the point in John's Gospel. It's like a hinge point. We have moved from the book of signs and have now entered into the book of glory. And from off stage, some characters appear, these Greeks, standing in for the wider world that has come to see, to perceive what is about to happen. And Jesus, knowing this, tells a parable of sorts, a metaphor, about how a seed, it must drop into the earth and die in order to rise. Which is hard. Because I'm okay letting this new thing happen as long as I can continue to hold to the current thing. It's when I have to let go, when I have to let this seed, this dried bit of creation whose very purpose is to die in order to rise, when I have to let go, that is hard. I wonder if I'm alone in that. So often we clutch to these seeds, not trusting that if we let them fall, that new life will actually emerge. Of any of the achievements in my life that followed, pulling a D in calculus, you should have seen my parents. Pulling a D in calculus probably brought the most gratitude and relief. I have never been so amazed to see on a transcript, you know, barely passed. But the most important thing that happened that year was that I came to understand that I needed to let go, that I needed to lose the idea that I had of who I was, of what I was meant for. I had to let that go, and I had to fail in order to really understand and allow for that. In order to allow what was taking root to grow. You see, friends, God is always making something new. Why? Why does this have to happen? Why can't God leave well enough alone? Why can't we just allow what is to remain? Why can't my children stay small so that I can protect them? Why can't my relationships stay the same so that I can count on them as they are? Why can't our politics have some kind of an order so that I can rely on them? Why can't our bodies stay strong and vital so that we can depend upon them? Because we fail, because we forget, because we fall away, because we change. Because we die. And because it is the desire of God that new life in us and in this world, that new life will emerge.